Let me say another word about this time matrix. I have found that the time matrix is one of the most amazing organizing thinking tools I have ever found in my life. You will discover that as you start to work with it. You learn basically that all you have to do is to learn to say two words. Yes and no. The key is the sequence. You must have a burning yes inside your mind and heart around your most important priorities. And then you will find your ability to say no is easy, it's effortless, it's guilt-free, it can be done pleasantly, cheerfully, even smilingly. But people that have not yet learned to focus on their highest priorities, who have not decided what their most important priorities are and said yes to them, cannot say no. Not without guilt, not smilingly, not cheerfully, not pleasantly. It is an amazing combination of two words. Yes to the most important things, the main things, and no to that which may be urgent but is not important, is not central to your highest priorities. Have you ever climbed a ladder of success and got to the top of the wall and then looked around and realized it was leaning against the wrong wall? Then it was too late. This happens so much to people simply because the pressures of their life, the expectations of others, the habits of the past combine together to create a wall that we think we should climb. But we've never asked the fundamental question, is that the important wall to climb? And once we're at the top, it is a hollow, sinking feeling to realize I've given all of this effort and energy, and I haven't even gone where I wanted to go. Now, once you have learned what the right wall is, once you have true focus, then you can focus on climbing it quickly, efficiently, and ignoring the many other ladders that other people may put up on other walls. This time matrix helps you clearly identify the right walls. You will come to know this for yourself as you really get into it, and above all, as you begin to use it. Because to know something and not to do it is really not to know it. When you apply it regularly, you will come to know it. You will love it. You will use it regularly. You will share it with others. Your whole team can be focused upon what really is important and can ignore that which is urgent but unimportant. No matter how pressing, how popular, how proximate it may be.
Now, given that introduction, I'm going to divide you into four groups. When you get into your group, each group will have one quadrant. And there are four flip charts around the room, so you'll go to your flip chart. And what I'd like you to do is to label the quadrant. So if this is where quadrant one is, then I'd like you to just brainstorm two lists very quickly. Think about being in your quadrant, so in this case, in quadrant one, for a lot of your time. If you spend a great deal of time in quadrant one, how are you going to feel spending that time in quadrant one? And what will be the long-term impact? And it doesn't have to be, here's the feeling, here's the impact. Brainstorm a list of feelings, then brainstorm a list of, well, what's the long-term impact if we spend a lot of time there? Does that make sense? All right. Now, the next part of this is each group is going to report out to us. And we're going to start with quadrant one. Then we're going to do three, four, and we'll save two for last. The best for last, right? Okay. So again, we'll have quadrant one, then three, then four, and then two.
All right. We decided we would feel resentful, stressed, overwhelmed, disgusted, empty, busy, angry, frustrated, emotional, unimportant, and used. Long term, you'd be sent to the funny farm. You'd eventually break down, get burned out, unfulfilled. You'd have health issues, both physical and mental, depression, anxiety. You become a mean person, lose your people skills because you're too busy to care about people's feelings. You'd lose your creativity, you'd be lost with no direction, and eventually you'd become detached for quadriform.
Wow. Not too good, huh? The thing to remember about quadrant one is this is where a lot of things happen. This is, again, remember, this assignment was spending a great deal of time here, maybe even too much time here, that can result in these feelings and or this long-term impact. Think about, though, when you get into quadrant one and you get it done, and it really was important and urgent, how does that feel? So that feels good. And if you're in quadrant one because it's the necessity of the job and you get things accomplished, that's really okay, and that's part of what we do. We get paid, in many cases, to be interrupted. Those of you in client service coordinators, if you're taking incoming calls from customers, you get paid to handle that. And you'll be in quadrant one a lot. And it's the nature of the job. But when you're in quadrant one, because of things you're not doing, when you're putting yourself there, that's when it gets to be bad, and that's when some of these impacts happen. So we're going to talk about that difference as we go through. Quadrant three, who's got the list? Come on, Jordan.
We had quadrant three, urgent but not important. Some of the feelings that we talked about were feelings of frustration, stress, confusion, and bias. We all have worked with people who are constantly asking us to work in quadrant three. And so when that person's name comes up on your phone or something like that, or you know they're calling, you may not want to answer it, or you may not want to talk to that person just based on past history. So the impact of that specifically creates kind of a boy who cried wolf scenario, which can also create a loss of productivity because they may actually have important things for you to do, but you may not always want to respond to them based on past history. Some of the other impacts are job dissatisfaction. If you're constantly working on things that aren't important, you don't feel good about your job and the work that you're doing. Poor health, an effect of stress, and I had mentioned before, a lack of focus. It's hard to stop doing something that's important to work on something that's not important and then get back focused on whatever you were working on before that actually makes an impact.
Great, thank you, Jordan. Do you notice that some of the things here are the same as in quadrant one? Why is that? The similarity is that they both fall into the urgent category. And too much time spent on urgent things generates similar feelings. The difference here is they aren't important either. Remember what we call this quadrant? Quadrant of what? Yeah, deception. Sneaky little guy here. It's the quadrant of deception. No long-term impact, very little consequence, and oftentimes done to please others, which also makes it a little tricky. Because when it's done to please others, sometimes the other person and that relationship is important. And so we feel like, well, because that's who it is, and I have this relationship, I've got to do it for them. And when we talk about interruptions this afternoon, we'll talk more about that, but that's not necessarily the case. But it is important to maintain relationships at the level we want to. So sometimes we will take something that ordinarily would have been a quadrant three, but because of who is asking, we may bump it to a one or a two so that we will do it. All right, good. Let's have quadrant four.
Our group did quadrant four, the quadrant of waste and excess. We felt that you would feel lazy, bored, poor, depressed, lonely, unhappy, and useless. And the long-term impact of those things would be alcoholism, unproductive, not fulfilled, failure, isolated, poverty, and no quality relationships.
I think you forgot suicide. Okay. Quadrant four happens when? When do you find yourself just dropping to four? When you've spent too much time in one, or maybe even three, or the combination of both. I mean, I don't know if you've used the term, but we've used it in our house. Boy, I'm just going to veg out tonight. You know, as if vegging out is a good thing. Now, again, when you look at the things from quadrant four, some of these in and of themselves wouldn't be bad. It's when they go to excess. Watching television is not bad until it goes to excess. Surfing the net or shopping or whatever, you know, it's those games, you know, playing solitaire. You know, sometimes we need that little break, but if you can't leave solitaire until the little cards bounce. And you see, you all know what that means. Let's go to quadrant two. Who's got the list? Jen.
Well, the first thing we said is we get the good quadrant. Ours was easy to come up with lots of things. For feelings, we said that you would feel, we would feel accomplished. We'd have warm fuzzies. We'd feel fulfilled, in control, relieved. We'd have less stress, confident, ambitious, motivated, happy, and smiling. And the impact of those things would be that we'd be able to help others. Since we felt good about ourselves and like we'd accomplished everything, we'd be able to turn outward so the focus could shift outward. And we'd be more organized, we'd have better health, we'd be successful, there would be no slipping through the cracks. We wouldn't ever have anything slip through the cracks that we wanted and needed to do. We'd be better leaders, we'd have better relationships, and our countenance would actually be changed. When you feel good about yourself, you feel like you're in control, you just look better. So those were our feelings and impacts.
Very good. Even look better. That was interesting. Countenance. You know, of the four quadrants, one, three, and four, they act on us. For two to happen, we have to act on it. Control is ours, but we have to take action to get into quadrant two. But what's really interesting about quadrant two, when you look at the feelings, remember before we said if for the next 21 days, things get really better, how would you feel? Let's see if there's any similarity. You said you would feel peace, proud, higher self-esteem, accomplished, relaxed, in control. Quadrant two, accomplished, warm fuzzies, fulfilled, in control, relieved, less stressed, confident, ambitious, motivated, happy, smiling. So there's a real relationship here between quadrant two and the things we talked about. It's a matter of acting on quadrant two. Now, where did we say an optimum place to spend time is? In two. And someone we know will be. So where are you going to find the time to spend more time in quadrant two? From three and four. Look at where you're spending. I would say four, first and foremost. Depending on how much time you're spending in four, you can gain time for two. You know, the idea that I don't have time is only a relative answer based on where you're currently spending your time. You're right. You don't have time if you're going to spend 25% of your time in quadrant four, in the quadrant of waste. But even three, we gain some time from three and four as well, and put it into two. So that's a great way of looking at this. And when you think about this issue of focusing in quadrant two and what that impact will have on the other three quadrants. So if you spend time focusing in quadrant two, it will help you manage quadrant one. Now again, quadrant one can be made smaller when you're procrastinating and forcing yourself into quadrant one, but quadrant one's not going to go away. Quadrant one helps us get things accomplished, important things, helps us respond to customers. So quadrant one for some people will always be bigger than for others based on their job and their home life. But by better focusing in quadrant two, it helps us better manage quadrant one because we see the importance and the urgency of those things as it relates to the quadrant two things. Also, focusing on quadrant two will help us minimize quadrant three. We won't do away with it, but we can certainly minimize some of the time we spend in quadrant three. And focusing on quadrant two can help us avoid quadrant four. So the big idea here is, let's get some more time in quadrant two. And the big idea is, how do I find time for quadrant two? It's by taking time from three and four. Things that are robbing me anyway, and where I can take some control, as Annette said, and do some things differently by getting into quadrant two. Now, the question then becomes, okay, is there a way I can organize my thinking and my processes so that I'll do that? The answer is yes. It's the next part of the seminar, which is the productivity pyramid. What do you know about pyramids? Not the $10,000 one, but the other ones. Okay, Egyptian. We know a lot of them are in Egypt. What else do you know about pyramids? They are extremely structurally sound. What else? They're old, aren't they? Yeah, they were ancient when the Romans ruled the world, or that part of the world. That's old, 4,500 years old. They were built as a monument to those people, were they not? For the next life. They believed in the next life and that they were going to take those possessions with them. But they were built as a monument to those people. Now, why are they so structurally sound? What makes them so? The large base. It's large, and it sets the stage to hold the rest of it up. And that's true as well, then, as we look at the productivity pyramid. The base of the productivity pyramid says identify values.